Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. My name is Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak. Ben, it's just a dynamic duo today. Just me and you. We're taking a little Monday break from the guest mock draft because we got to start talking a little bit about these prospects, man. We are, holy cow, you can stretch the saying next week and you could actually truly mean that the draft is next week, right?
We're almost in single-digit days, baby. We're almost a number on the counter.
Dude, this is crazy. It's crazy how quick the draft is coming up on us. We've been doing this podcast all year long, but we really have not heard from you much. So what I wanted to do and what I thought would be a really good exercise, a little bit of a breather in between this guest mock draft, give people a little bit of a break. Let's go back to some pure draft talk, all right? Let's go back to our roots. You have been finishing up your prospect rankings, and that's what I want to talk about today. I want to get into a couple of the positions that you really want to talk about, some guys that you really like, maybe some different order than what you've been hearing from the mainstream guys in different positions. And so if it's cool with you, that's what I think we're going to roll with today, because I think people will really like hearing some different insight from you and get the opinion on your eyes on some of these prospects.
You know, that is cool with me, Trevor, because that is my job. That's my number one thing that I'm responsible for doing. And so I feel like I should be able to do it pretty well.
Well,
and putting out the prospect rankings, of course, is always fun, because what happens anytime you put out a prospect ranking of 20 linebackers? First comment is always, what, you haven't watched this guy? I'm going to be honest with you, Tiger. I'm going to keep it a buck 50 with you. Nope. And most of the time, what I don't have the heart to say, most of the time is, I did. I watched a couple games, very quickly figured out that he wasn't going to break my top 15, and then moved on. Because I want to make sure I can talk about as many prospects as possible, especially right during our Nashville live shows, sponsored by Under Armour Rush, all 3 days of the NFL Draft, Nashville, Tennessee.
There it is. There's the plug right there.
Yeah, dude, sneaking it in there. We're like 2.5 minutes into the podcast already.
It's good.
But I don't have the time to be doing formal film evaluations on all these prospects the way like Kyle does. You know, Kyle releases that prospectus. It's a big, huge, healthy undertaking. So, yeah, like Amike Gwele, Houston linebacker. A couple people were upset I didn't watch him. Going to be honest. Watched a game. Stopped watching.
All right, let's actually talk linebackers, though, because linebacker, we'll start here. It's a super polarizing class, because I think, you know, as we were going through the year, there were guys that we maybe really liked. You know, certainly Devin White and Devin Bush were at the top of the list basically for the entire year. But you had guys like Mack Wilson, who we were really high on at times. Vosan Joseph had a stretch there, especially that LSU game where, dude, he looked incredible. Looked like a top 50 pick almost. You've got guys like Bobby Okereke, Joe Giles Harris, Tavon Coney. A lot of names to know. A lot of names have been thrown around in this linebacker class. But when it comes to your final rankings, now how, as you see these guys as they're about to go into draft weekend, what's that linebacker class look like for you, and how strong do you think it really is?
Yeah, so I tweeted out a month or so ago, because I had already known I'd done the top guys, right? And I said, like, well, guess what, team? I have no round one grades on a running back, and I have no round one grades on any linebackers. And the running back thing, people were very cool with that. Nobody took a lot of umbrage with it. Boy, the linebacker thing, people were not psyched. People were a little upset. The reality is this: if you're gonna be a first round grade for me at linebacker, then before year one, you better be able to play 75-80% of the snaps. Like, there are two linebackers for most teams that are gonna be playing more than 60% of the snaps. That means I'm talking about, you're playing more than just two out of three downs, which means you're able to hang against the pass and hang regularly against the run. There's two linebackers in this class I would say right now can hang regularly against the pass and against the run. So potential guys more than 66% of the snaps. That's the Devin Bush and Devin White.
The Devins.
Both of them have enough issues in their game that they did not receive a round one grade from me. The number two highest graded trait that I have for linebackers is block deconstruction and physicality. You have to be able to step up into much larger human beings than you.
Yes.
And beat them to landmarks, retain your ground, retain your leverage point, be able to impact plays in the trees. We're talking about in the trees, right? Like, my number five linebacker is Ben Burkervin out of Washington. I'm higher on him than a lot of people. I like him a lot. The number one issue with Burkervin is he lacks the ability to play in the trees. So his tackles are either 2 yards behind line of scrimmage or 6 yards beyond it. Nothing in between.
When you say play between the trees, it's a scouting term for playing near the line of scrimmage, correct?
Right, up with the big guys. You know, you're a 6 foot linebacker with a 6'6" offensive lineman. Exactly.
Explaining some scout terminology to the good people. You know, all right, keep going.
You got to have the glossary out.
You were on a roll. I didn't want to mess you up. I just wanted to make sure that people knew that they could really appreciate this terminology and this wordsmith that you truly are. All right, keep going.
They better have taken notes, written the definition down.
You better be writing.
The next time I use it in lecture, they better know. Yep. They better be ready right away. But
quiz on Friday.
Devin Bush and Devin White, in my opinion, both struggle when it comes to playing in the trees. With Bush, it's a bit more of a physical thing. He's a little bit smaller of a guy. He's dynamic and explosive. He's compact, but he's not necessarily super strong in the upper half, so he gets washed down. With White, it's a processing thing. He jumps at color too quickly. He drives into sunlight too quickly, and he goes into gaps in which he doesn't belong. Both of those are issues that kept them out of elite, kept them out of strong grading in those areas, and really hurt their overall evaluation. I have Devin Bush slightly higher because he's higher impacted coverage. Both of them are early second round grades for me. I believe both come in my top 40 prospects, if memory serves. Yeah, Devin Bush 29, Devin White at 32. Neither of them are round one grades. I don't have a round one graded linebacker in this class, man.
Wow. Okay. All right. So, I mean, that's kind of, and I assume because you don't have a round one linebacker grade there, and you know, people can go read your full linebacker rankings, and we'll release our big boards kind of in the next couple of days here. But I assume that when it comes to depth after that, if it's not too rich at the top, that means there's probably not a lot of depth that you like later in this class too. Is that true?
I mean, no. Like, I mean, obviously you eventually get around to like people being good role players. I think like the way I actually described it was
like, okay, hold on. At what number on your rankings are you getting to, like, mid-day three grades?
At linebacker five, or mid-day three? We're talking about, like, linebacker 11.
So oh, my top okay. 10, okay.
Yeah, my top 10 are all round four and above. So me, I have Devin Bush, Devin White, Mac Wilson,
so it's
and Blake.
Pretty, okay, so it's pretty crowded there for you. Okay.
Yeah, right. I mean, I've got seven guys in rounds two and three, which is decent. The thing is, with no round one guys,
way higher than what I finish with. But
the issue is with no round one guys, it's just very tough to find like a round one starter, right?
Yeah.
So we've like Bush and White, they're going to be drafted in the first round. I think they're going to be starters. They're going to have problems, whatever. Next up is Mac Wilson and Blake Cashman. That's kind of the next tier there. Mm-hmm. And those are guys that I think should find the field in year one, should start in year one, but they're going to be more so linebacker twos on their team. They're not going to be the primary guys. After that, we start with Ben Burkervin out of Washington, Bobby Okereke out of Stanford, Voshon out of Florida, Drew Tranquil out of Notre Dame. All of these players are guys who could start in a specific deployment, in a specific scheme, but they're not elite players, right? They're not scheme agnostic players. They need particular fits to work out well.
Yeah.
And so now at this point, we're drafting maybe starters, depending on if you've got them cast right in your defense.
Yeah. See, but I'm not drafting those guys like before. I don't know, man. I'm just not drafting those guys very high at all. So I think we might end up having pretty close to the same order, I think, of names when it comes to the linebacker class. I just might be in terms of round grade. Now, I don't do hard round grades like I know that Kyle and Joe and it sounds like you do with these hard round grades for these guys. I don't really do that just because I don't have a numerical system or something like that set up, but I would be lower on where I would take these guys, and I think that'll reflect my overall big board. So, but I'm not sure. I got to run through all the positions this week, really nail them down to finish my final big board going into to the week of the draft. Man, we're getting I better hurry up here. We're losing the days. Let's get to the edge rushers though. Really great class, I think. A lot of names at the top to like. And I mean, when I say at the top, I mean the very top of the draft, middle of the first round, end of the first round, early day two. You can find somebody, and then as we get into day three, it's kind of a pick your preference on a lot of these guys. What's the edge outlook for you?
Yeah, so you know, you remarked that I had seven round one through three grades for the linebackers. I've got 14 for the edges, so it might be a good class. There's
I think I'm more okay with that. So
right, you know, it's very difficult to tell. No, we have 14 top 100 players for me, which really is something. The reason I'm excited to talk about these guys is because I I've had umbrage with TDN's take on this for a while, and after my final grades are done, I'm ready to say it. I think Montez Sweat is really good, and I know that Kyle's not super huge on him. I know that Joe is not super, super huge on him. I have Montez Sweat as my edge three. I have Montez Sweat at 12 overall, borderline top 10 player for me. He's above Josh Allen. He's above Cleveland Furrell. He's above Ja'Kai Polite, though that says more about Polite than it does Montez Sweat. I think Sweat is probably...
On the field. Hold up. On the field only. Montez Sweat or Ja'Kai Polite.
Film-wise, Polite had a better grade. Yeah,
yeah,
but,
you're damn right.
Yeah. Sweat had a great film grade for me, and then he also decided to test out of his doggone mind. And that, you know, kind of helps a little bit.
A little bit.
And then obviously, and there's really strong production behind Sweat's profile as well.
Yes.
So when I talk about high floor prospects, I typically talk about guys who just graded really well in all three facets of my grading scale: production, athleticism, and film.
Yeah, HFPs, as they call them.
Yeah, to me, Sweat is clearly, like, as far as, like, high floor goes for edge rushers, I think Bose is the highest floor, and then it's Sweat right there with him. And then when you get into guys like Burns, Allen, Polite, even Furrell, who's high floor, I would say that Sweat is a higher floor than all of them. He's probably the most ready to produce in year one, again, besides Bosa, especially if we're talking about a 4-3 system, whereas guys like Burns and Allen will probably benefit from standing up early. And so I'm really happy with where Sweat graded out for me, even though he's edge three. I think a team taking Montez Sweat top five makes total sense to me. Like, it kind of comes down to your preference between him, Burns, Allen, you know, whatever you want. Mm. But I think Sweat's a tremendous player, and I know that I think I'm going to be the highest of him on staff, and I'm very happy with that.
Yeah,
that
I think you are. I think you're probably going to be the highest on him. I like Montez Sweat. There's things he does well. I think if you're putting him in a true 4-3, you're letting him at least play from a three-point stance most of the time. I think you can get a lot of that first step burst. Obviously, that was such a big deal, and it came out huge at the combine where, man, this guy can fire off the ball on the ground that he can cover in that first step, and how quick he can get by offensive linemen, I think, means a lot. Even though I don't think he's the most flexible guy in the hips, I don't think he's got the best bend in this class. You have to also factor in the fact that he is clearly, like, his get-off is so insanely fast that, you know, he might not need to have the best bend in this class to even be a productive speed rusher. And so I like Montez Sweat. I don't think I'm going to certainly be as high on him as it sounds like you are with him being edge three for you. But, you know, if you put him in the right system, I think he could have a lot of success. Is there a guy, you know, you talked about having a lot, I think you said 14 in the top three? That you said there?
14 in the top three rounds, yes,
okay,
sir.
Okay, so who's a guy who, like, let's say a day two target, who you really like, who is almost like that top day two target?
Anthony Nelson out of Iowa.
Get at it. Are you serious?
Fully to trigger you. I mean, he's a day two grade for
did
me.
I watch the wrong tape? At this point, I've got to think I watched the wrong tape.
Listen.
I don't understand it. Did you watch the Mississippi State game?
No, I did not. That's not a game I evaluated.
Okay. I'm trying to think of games off the top of my head.
I can open it up. Let me see.
Okay, which games did you watch? Hold on. Let me open this up really quick.
But here's the thing about Nelson. I'll talk a little bit about him as I pull up the grading scale I have for him. Nelson is very, very good at attacking a half man and turning it into a pressure, especially for a big guy. I don't think he's going to finish a ton of his reps, but he's very, very good at compromising pocket depth and pocket integrity. And that initial pressure helps your other rushers out a lot.
Okay, so I watched... Do you have what games you need up there?
Yes.
Okay, I watched Penn State. I watched Mississippi State. I watched Iowa State. I watched Maryland. And I think there was one other one that I watched that I can't find. But that's what I have. Which ones did you watch?
I watched Penn State like you did. I watched Iowa State like you did. I watched Northwestern. And I watched Wisconsin.
Did I watch Northwestern? Was that the other one? That
might have been. He had a good game against Northwestern. At least in my opinion.
Maybe,
obviously...
bro, maybe I just watched like the wrong five games of this dude. But here's, I didn't get it other than big. That's all I got.
But like, big is very helpful.
Okay, but like big is helpful. But like I'm not drafting just big in like the top 100. Like, you got to be able to do something. I didn't even think he had that much power for a big man.
Well, let me ask you this. You don't just want to draft big in the top 100. I get that and I respect that. Do you want to maybe perhaps draft big with, and I'm waiting for mock draftable to load, a 4.23 short shuttle, a 6.953 cone, a 1.18-inch broad, a 35.5-inch
vert. I don't understand those numbers. Those numbers did not make any sense to me at all because I didn't – Oh, maybe I'm going to have to go back and watch two different Anthony Nelson games before I kind of finish my eval for him because of the four or five games that I watched.
Yeah, I got to throw in the Mississippi State game. But what it comes down to is like when
he was getting bodied in the run game and in the pass game by their backup right tackle, man.
Listen, it was the bowl game. He had mentally checked out. He knew
it was the Outback Bowl, brother. There was a Bloomin' Onion on the line. You win that game, you get a free Bloomin' Onion.
That's true.
Expect you to play for a stupid Lombardi trophy, all right?
You can't be in a Lombardi trophy, can you? Dip that in any Cajun mayo. It doesn't happen. But I do like Anthony Nelson a fair bit, and I would like him on day two. I will say probably the guy who's the legit answer to your question is Christian Miller, the Alabama kid.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, a lot of people like Christian Miller. That makes sense.
Yeah, and as I wrote in my edge rankings, I go to sleep every night thinking about the sack against Oklahoma because that play is just, like, stupid. It's just that early sack against Murray where he took Cody Ford and just – oh, no, it wasn't Cody Ford. It was Bobby Evans. And, I mean, he just ran three circles around him. It was like a bag drill. The unbelievable angle at which he was to the ground just illustrates the potential this guy has if his knees stay healthy, which maybe they never do. But when guys can run under the table, you take gambles on them. That's just the reality. It's a high-impact position, and he has the cardinal trait at the spot. So I'm not sure exactly where you want to go for it because he definitely has a medical red flag. But if you're willing to do it on day two, I mean, if the guy can stay healthy as a sub-package rusher, he's going to be a nightmare.
All right, let's do it. Offensive tackle rankings, give them to me. Lay them on me.
I believe you already know and were affected by my offensive tackle one, who is Cody Ford out of Oklahoma. Juwan Taylor is number two.
Now, okay, hold on. Wait. Sorry. I do want to get – I want to hear you kind of rattle him off a little bit there, but I want to talk about Cody Ford. Oh, there we go. Being number one in your offensive tackle rankings.
Yeah.
What makes Cody Ford – number one, is it the fact that he is, let's say, like scheme versatile, like whether it comes to him being in a vertical offense or him being in more of a power running offense or things like that? Could you see him? Is he number one because of that versatility and what he could do? Or is he number one because in what system you see him working best in, his ceiling as an offensive lineman is higher than everyone else's? And then to go off of that question, what system is that? What teams would need to draft him for him to be that number one guy?
Yeah, so what makes Cody Ford offensive tackle one is, and this is where he created the most strongly for me, is like his ability to retain to have elite level body control and elite level athletic ability in the kick slide at his size is really something that I think is special.
Which is huge.
Exciting.
I mean, he's huge. What did he weigh in at the combine?
Right, he's like 330, 335.
Yeah, man,
and
this dude's
he's moving
big.
Comparably to Taylor, who's like 310, and Williams, who's like 305, right? To me, like, that's just – there's like he's carrying extra 30 pounds. He is a dense fella. He is compact.
You cannot teach girth. I've often said that.
Right, exactly. Listen, the number one thing you can't teach is girth.
Yes.
But it's important to note, Ford is my seventh overall player. Juwan Taylor is my ninth, and Jonah Williams is my 11th. And so really, like, evaluating for 32 teams, that's where I have them ranked. If I knew which team I was drafting for – I could very easily take any one of the three and be comfortable with it.
Okay, right? So when you do your big boards, and this is a really good exercise, and it's a really good point. You do it with versatility in mind throughout the entire board. Yes.
Yeah. The number one thing that you have to talk about as an analyst in the media is that we're scouting for 32 teams, and that makes things very, very difficult at times for certain players. The number one guy that comes to mind, offensive tackle, is Andre Dillard, who ends up being my offensive tackle six. A mid-round two grade, a top 50 player for me. Listen, if I knew Andre Dillard was going to like Arizona to play in the Cliff Kingsbury air raid, draft him number one overall. Like you're gonna play so nicely to his strengths and to what he did in college. If Andre Dillard ends up going to like not Tennessee anymore, it's not really running the exotic smash mouth. If he goes to Jacksonville, if he goes to the Giants, I think that's really a more of a projection fit for him. I don't think he fits as nicely there, and he's more likely to play as like a round two player than a round one player. Dillard's projection forward is heavily conditional on which scheme he ends up in. And because I'm scouting for the media, not for a specific team, I cannot reflect that in my grades. I can only reflect that in my write-up, which is the important thing to do. If we go back to my linebackers, like I said, there were so many guys who are like conditional starters. Like Bobby Okereke out of Stanford, if he ends up doing what Darius Leonard did for the Colts this year, all pro, let's do it again. Like he is like Leonard, but I think he like burstier on the field, right? They have a lot of similar traits. Leonard wasn't highly ranked for me. Okereke's ranked a little higher because I'm trying to learn from Leonard. But the reality is Leonard benefited so much from what the Colts asked him to do. Sure. So that's what we have to acknowledge is that we're scouting agnostic of scheme, and that inherently puts cufflinks on us for prospects who have specific profiles that work in specific deployments.
And it's also and it's just also built in get out of jail free cards. So guess what? We're never wrong. You know what? Scouting. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Always important to remember that I am never wrong.
Yeah, it's always important that to this date, I've never been wrong. Let's finish up with quarterbacks because you have contextualizing quarterbacks coming out. It's
today?
Today, which is Monday, which is when this podcast is releasing. And if you were listening to it on a day after Monday, shame on you. Subscribe to the podcast, Lockdown NFL Draft. You can subscribe anywhere, mainly iTunes. It's beautiful. It's got all kinds of great nuggets in there. Ben, from doing contextualizing quarterbacks, really putting all of these dudes that you did this for under a microscope, how did your quarterback rankings kind of shake out? And I think a better question than in terms of maybe what their ranking is, where are you drafting these guys? Like, what is their overall grades and where you think they should actually be drafted? Because we forget that there's a big difference between saying Dwayne Haskins is QB2 and having Kyler as maybe a first-round grade and Dwayne Haskins is, I don't know, like, let's just say, like, a third-round grade, right? It's one spot in your rankings, but it's a big deal. So get a little bit deeper into, let's talk about the rankings a little bit and then talk about kind of where they are in terms of your grades.
Yeah, so that, like, the most important thing to remember with quarterbacks is that
you can't teach girth.
You can't teach girth. You grade them, and at least for me, in like two kind of separate ways. There's the usual ranking system that I use for all my prospects, so I know they fit my big board. And then there's just like the overarching question of like, would I trade up for this player in the first round? Yes, no. Like, which bucket are they in? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's kind of, that's just how you have to look at it. I think about last year, I had three first-round quarterbacks grade-wise. Josh Rosen, Lamar Jackson, and Baker Mayfield. Sam Darnold was a round two grade for me after I finished his evaluation. That being said,
what was Allen for you? Do you remember?
Oh, Allen was round five. But with Darnold specifically, it was, yeah, he's a round two grade. But in a vacuum, I'd be comfortable taking him round one. I'd be comfortable taking him early because he's very young. Sure. And I know that he's going to continue to develop. And a lot of his weaknesses on evaluation right now are the product of rawness, of youngness. And I think I can work on them. So there's kind of two schemas. That said, I have one quarterback with a round two grade, none with a round one grade. That one quarterback is Kyler Murray. He is the only quarterback that I would be interested in taking in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, oh, young man could sling the pill. Oh, man, he's
Kyler?
Fun to watch. Kyler.
Dude, Kyler can throw, man.
Dude, I mean, Kyler, like, I believe I saw, I forget who it was. I believe it was Matt Miller of Bleacher Report who said that, like, you know, gone through all the quarterbacks, the best deep ball in the class is Drew Lock. Oh, baby, the best deep ball in the class is Kyler Murray, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah,
that
no,
man
it's
can
Kyler.
Throw it pretty down the field.
Yeah.
And he's got really impressive, if you look at contextualized quarterbacking, ball placement and accuracy numbers deep down the field. We're talking about, 20-plus yards down the field. He's still throwing an accurate ball about 8 out of 10 throws, and he's throwing a well-placed ball about 5.5 out of 10 throws.
You know what I think is the most important part of Kyler Murray throwing down the field? And I don't necessarily mean, like, 56 yards down the field. I know that's might be what you're referencing there. But, like, in the intermediate, like, let's say, like, 30, maybe 40 yards down the field, dude still got velocity on his passes, right? That was such a big deal for me when I was watching Kyler Murray and I saw him throw that intermediate to deep ball passes, right? Is that he could truly sometimes stepping in, sometimes not even really
right,
with maybe a narrow base, he can get velocity behind that ball. Kyler has probably the most complete arm in the class. I think what I think.
Right, and a critical thing is that the mechanics for throwing short and the mechanics for throwing deep are different. Like, the power that you have to recruit, the arm slot, the angle your arm slot has to come through at, and your release point all change when you're trying to put air under the ball as opposed to keeping the ball low and flat. And what you see with Kyler Murray, which people like to bring up Patrick Mahomes parallels, there are two areas in which I see Patrick Mahomes parallels with Kyler. They're both important areas, but there's only two. The first is the comfort to hang back, direct traffic on scramble plays, work with space, and then make wild throws. Mahomes was more like across the body, other side of the field, but Murray is really comfortable just hanging behind the line of scrimmage, pointing guys out, manipulating people around, and then throwing it into space. The second is the arm slotting. It's the baseball background. Murray's ability to get his elbow up and to heighten his release point to really get air under the football 50 plus yards down the field is something that's so inherently natural to him. And you also saw it in Mahomes. What's more commonly talked about is when they go sidearm, right, to get around people or to keep the ball low, but also that over the top release and that ability to hinge the spine over and to really get like your lower body into the throw. That a lot of that, it looks very baseball-y in terms of the mechanics, something that Murray has. There are two players, in my opinion, in this class who really have excellent control of the ball going deep. It's Murray and it's not Locke. It's Tyree Jackson out of Buffalo. And Tyree Jackson is generally an inaccurate quarterback, but most of his impressive accurate throws come when he's throwing 20 plus yards down the field, which is really funny because it's not really the way it's supposed to happen. But Jackson's got a really nice feel for throwing deep as well.
So who's your top five in order? Let me get that.
Top five in order goes Kyler Murray, quarterback one. Dwayne Haskins, two.
Okay.
Will Greer, quarterback three.
Oh,
Tyree Jackson, quarterback four.
Oh,
and Drew Lock,
my
quarterback five.
Oh.
There's a very important thing to remember when it comes to Drew Lock, and this is it.
I thought you were going
to
say Will Greer, and I was going to say that he's a Gator great, but keep going.
There's a critical thing to remember with Drew Lock, and it's that he's not very good. And it's so important
Jeez,
to remember
man.
That. It's so important to remember that because Locke is just he's
you
very
said that
good.
So good, man. You set me up. You had me. I was waiting for it. I was like, feed me this knowledge, Ben. Lay it on me. You've seen every throw. Give me the X factor. Tell me the something that the people aren't telling me yet. And you got me. That was good.
Yeah.
Not saying you're wrong, but I guess.
Yep.
You got me.
Locke is more generally accurate than he is well placed. So he puts the ball in like a catchable spot, but very often, like on his short throws, he drives them too low because he puts a lot of velocity on them that doesn't belong there. On his deep throws, he doesn't put them outside and protects them from the corner. He often hangs them inside and lets them get played on. He's a little bit too risk prone with the football. And
certainly.
Critically, he has the ability to scramble and extend plays, and he's a really good thrower on the move, but he doesn't do it. When Locke gets pressure, he fades out from behind it and chucks it instead of escaping. And if you go onto contextualized quarterbacking, you can see how often a quarterback was pressured, but you can also see his responses to each pressure in terms of did he stand and deliver? Did he scramble? Did he escape and then throw the ball after he fled the pressure? Did he take a sack? And Locke overwhelmingly, over 70% of the time, stood and delivered in the face of pressure. It's one of the highest numbers in the class, but he's such a good athlete. It's like Murray and then like Locke, Daniel Jones, Tyree Jackson is kind of that next tier of athlete. And those guys are regularly getting out of the pocket. Locke doesn't do it. He hangs in the pocket and it's to his detriment. His numbers against pressure drop precipitously. He's almost four times more likely to throw an interception. So he needs to learn how to extend plays, how to better anticipate pressure and not just bail and throw generally inaccurate and risky passes under pressure. If he can solve that, we're cooking with grease. To me, he's on the Blaine Gabbert, Blake Bortles, Derek Carr spectrum of just players who are good when it's short, quick, and easy. And once you throw a grain of sand into the finely tuned machine, things start breaking down.
Yeah. I think Garoppolo is kind of a good example of somebody who I watched in college who was that. Like, did a lot of, like, getting it out really quick. It was quick, powerful, snap of the arm. But actually, I think that he kind of took his next step. Now, obviously, he got to work with Brady for a little bit, so I guess, you know, that goes into it. But he was one of those guys, too. I would put him in that category because I remember watching Garoppolo and seeing similar stuff to some of the quarterbacks that you named there. And he was one who I think took the next step where I think these other guys are kind of waiting for it. We've seen a little bit of it with Derek Carr, but I think you're right to say that it's always a projection there, right? And especially when that's kind of all you've known as a quarterback. You really have got to have a good quarterback's coach, a good offensive coordinator, a guy who knows that he's going to be able to develop you and perhaps change a lot of the mechanical things that make you a much more consistent quarterback in a lot of areas other than just getting the ball out very quickly. Because, you know, we're seeing a lot of other offenses. You've got to be able to do that. You've got to be able to push the ball consistently. And if you can't, your team will always be looking to replace you. Right? I mean, they're always going to be looking to find a guy who can be better down the field. Ben, that was really great stuff. That was only four positions, I'm sure, as we get closer to the draft sometime next week when I start finalizing my board as well. We'll go through some other positions. So that was great, dude.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. And I'd like to apologize to Drew Locke and his family. I didn't mean to do you like that, but play better. And then we won't have a problem.
Listen, he's a nice kid. He knows that there's haters out there. He just now knows that you're one of them. Okay, everybody.
Comped himself to Aaron Rodgers at the combine.
Listen,
Trevor.
You got to have some
stones. Inexcusable.
Listen, you got to have some stones, all right? You got to believe. If you don't believe in yourself, Ben, who's gonna? Guys, we have an awesome draft show that we are super excited about. I had to make sure that I mentioned it a little bit more than Ben did. Early on in the show, what'd you say?
My mom. I'm thinking of people who believe in me. Oh. I don't know, she's generally pretty supportive.
Yeah, no, I mean, if she watches the draft stream, she will. We're going
to
be recording.
I like to think you would be.
we're going to be recording a live draft show all 3 days of the NFL draft live from STK Restaurant in Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to be having all kinds of special guests with us. We're going to be doing a lot of fun stuff. We're going to be coming up with analysis for every single pick, every single round. I'm super looking forward to this. Presented by our friends over at UA Rush. That's Under Armour's latest performance innovation line. They've been so great. I'm so excited to get things kicked off. And then tomorrow, we got to mention, we're getting right back to the guest mock draft. We're going to have two really great guests. I already know who they are, but you guys don't. I got to keep it under wraps. I got to give you guys a cliffhanger. You got to tune into the next episode. All I'm going to say is it's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to learn a lot more about the draft, even outside of the two teams that are next, which are the Seattle Seahawks and the Baltimore Ravens. So until
it's
then.
It's Russell Wilson
and Earl Thomas. Yeah, we're getting Russell Wilson on the actual podcast. Maybe.
Talking trades.
Russell, how do you like New York? All right, until then, you keep it locked right here on the Locked On NFL Draft.